Turn me up a little bit. Turn me up a little bit.
From this track.
That's what I want to sound.
All right, welcome back, y'all. What You Scared to Say podcast, episode 22. Before we get started, like, subscribe, share. All right, we are here at the 4th District, West Philadelphia Container Village. It's an event going on today. They got the politicians out here telling us why we should vote, how we going to vote, and why you should come out and everything. We got some state representatives about to sit down with us. So stay tuned, like, subscribe, share.
RedCon 1. Use code Alante. We're going to pop it up across the screen. Use code Alante to get your discount at checkout. This is the best performance supplements on the market right now. They're the fastest growing. You know, Deion Sanders just became part owner. He bought in. It's lit. So, you know, when I say RedCon 1, you know we associated with the big dogs. We only messing with the elites.
If the criminals just going around this committing murders in the city of Philadelphia, they're not going into gun stores and buying guns. So when y'all talk about gun reform, you know, I don't think my generation understands, like, how would that transfer? How would that stop the violence in the city? Because they're not going into stores buying guns. They got ghost guns. They're buying illegal guns. Is that, like, kind of fighting, like, the war on drugs? Is that, like, a losing battle? Like, should the effort and money and focus and all the academic study, should it be on that part of it? Or, like, you understand?
Absolutely. I think addressing the gun, and it's a great question, because there's not going to be one singular solution to, you know, this crisis, because we also have to talk about the foundational systemic issues that our communities have experienced, which is a direct result as to why we are experiencing this uptick in crime. And, you know, just to put this out there, in the city of Philadelphia, we are actually on a downtick when it comes to homicides, when it comes to gun shootings. We're actually seeing a 35% decrease. And again, it's not a direct result of any type of, not gun control, but gun safety. And when I say gun safety versus gun control, it's not that we want to take away your guns, because, you know, we've been in this country at a time where we needed to be able to protect our families, to be able to protect our livelihood. When you think of, you know, our black and brown sisters, you know, down south, I mean, they needed to have access to their, you know, to their rights to ensure that they can, you know, protect their land. So it's not that we want to take away the guns. We just want to get them out of the hands of bad actors. And, you know, you were absolutely right that, you know, individuals aren't just going to walk lawful citizens, aren't just going to walk for, well, unlawful citizens aren't just going to walk into, you know, a gun store and purchase, but what they're going to go to is the gun show that's out in Morgan County that doesn't necessarily require background checks for certain parts of a gun, or, you know, certain guns that they're selling. Or what they'll do is they'll go online and purchase what is called ghost guns and ghost gun kits. We just had a settlement from a Republican, you know, court that two of the gun manufacturers for ghost guns, and, you know, for those that don't know what they are, essentially you're able to hop online with a credit card and purchase the deconstruction of a gun with the intent to put it together once it comes to your home. So you literally have two companies that are in Pennsylvania that are responsible for 80% of the ghost guns that are being used in the criminal activity here in the city of Philadelphia. Two companies. And it's not just an issue here in Pennsylvania. California just banned them from selling these type of guns in their communities across their state. Maryland just did it down in Baltimore. And now the city of Philadelphia, for the next 4 years, those two companies, who again represent the 80% of guns that are coming into our community that are ghost guns, can no longer sell those guns. But again, that's one part of the problem, is, you know, not just the guns that are, you know, coming into our communities in that form or fashion, but it's also the investments that we have to make. In the city of Philadelphia, we've seen far too long, which contributes to our poverty rate, that there was a lack of investment coming from the state, coming from the feds, to ensure that people had access to jobs, resources, and economic opportunity in order to move us into the right direction. So again, it's not just about, you know, the gun control or the gun safety, but it's multiple things that we have to tackle in order to, you know, fix the challenges that exist in our community.
I love the response that you gave, because I think it's important that the Democratic Party and people just running the explain that y'all don't want to take away the guns to lawful citizens, because when they hear that, it's like, I kind of agree with the other side. Like, I want to keep my guns. If we law-abiding as citizens and we're following gun safety and we're, you know, protecting our family, you know, what's wrong? You know, why the message gets construed, you know, and so I'm glad you was able to get that out there. Something you talked about, because I'm gonna bounce subject to subject real quick. It's not going to be long. I just love this, because like I have such a younger fan base, and it's like they get to really hear and see, and it feels real to them. You know, instead of just some commercial that, you know, somebody paid for, right? Some one-liners and stuff. So when it comes to like landlords and stuff like that, do y'all have conversations about the way that like the rent goes up and housing crisis that we got here, because we got a poverty situation here, and I feel like in the city of Philly they charge astronomical rates and prices for, you know, you getting whatever, and they don't fix anything. It's like, what type of laws or what are y'all conversations are y'all having to put some type of control over that, because the housing and the renting situation in the city is crazy. People cannot afford to live anymore. It's like, you can't pay Pico, you can't pay gas, you can't pay the rent, you can't go out to get food. It's like, it's like, what are you doing to put a cap on, like, you know, when it comes to the landlords and stuff like that, because people, they struggling. And it's like, when we hear the don't live above your means, and it's like I don't want to work my whole life just so I can only take one vacation every couple years, and people not living above their means, they struggling, you know, and you want to have some type of life. So people are frustrated, especially my generation, 30, you know, 5 and up, when it comes to that. So, like, what type of conversations are y'all having about that?
I want to first say this. You keep saying it's 35 and up, but I feel like you think I'm old. I'm only 39. I'm like, generation, we in the same generation. No, I understand. No, I understand. And, you know, it's a great question, because I just heard this statistic literally just yesterday. I mean, for a very long time, there's been a constant focus on home ownership, right? And, you know, our generation that graduated from college in 2006, 2007, we graduated into a recession, right? We, you know, had to live at home with our parents. We had to, you know, prolong our, you know, dreams of starting a family, purchasing a home. It just was really out of our reach for a very long time. And I think as a direct result of that, you see the next generation that's not necessarily interested in making that type of investment. I mean, they don't know at their early age that they want to, you know, firmly stay in the city of Philadelphia. They are a lot more mobile. I know sometimes they use the language transient, which I feel like has a negative connotation, because it gives you a sense of that you're not stable. But, you know, they just, again, don't necessarily, you know, want to. They should have that option, right? And we have to create policies that are protecting renters, holding landlords accountable, but ensuring that we're doing it in a responsible way, that we're not picking winners and losers, right? Because when our landlords, who are, you know, mom and pop landlords, I'm not talking about the big conglomerates, I mean, that's how, you know, Black people have been able to generate wealth. So we don't necessarily want to put them out of business, right? But how do we ensure that they're not increasing your rent at least 50% for no reason? Or how do we ensure that they're not being predatory, where they're just increasing it, trying to get you out so they can sell to the highest bidder? So that has been a focal point of a lot of our conversation, particularly coming out of COVID, which is why you saw during COVID, we really pushed for renters support, you know, to pay for people's rent that, you know, just got behind for whatever reason, whether it be economics or having to shift, you know, their ability to actually go to work because they had to take care of somebody at home. You know, we made sure we focused on that. But then also we made sure that landlords got the support that they needed so they wouldn't be putting people out, right? We also put the moratorium on on evictions for a while during COVID. COVID. And as a direct result of that, you had some of my colleagues in council who I encourage you to interview, because they, you know, they really ran off this issue because it's happening a lot in their district. So that's Councilwoman Jamie Gaultier. You know, her area is, you know, gentrifying. I'll talk about another issue.
Right.
As it relates to renting. You also have Councilwoman Kendra Brooks, and you have Councilwoman Nicole Rourke, who all champion the issue of renter assistance, not just during COVID, but over a long period of time, that that has to be incorporated into our budget conversations, because again, that 40% of Philadelphians are renters, so we have to pass policies to protect them. Again, they did the moratorium, but then they also did something called the Renter's Diversion Program, where before you could put a tenant out, you were required to come to the table by law to sit down and coordinate a potential response with the landlord, to where you all can come to some common ground. Because land, I mean, unless they're trying to sell,
right.
Landlords don't want to be backed up on rental payments,
right.
And they also don't want to put you in a situation where you can't financially be stable, because that makes them unstable. And guess what? Them banks want their money.
Right.
So
right.
We have to make sure that we continue moving policies that you know, help sustain affordable housing here in the city of Philadelphia. So not only do we have to create more affordable housing, but we also have to preserve the housing that we have. Because an issue that happened in Councilwoman Gaultier's district was there was a private developer that owned a series of apartments. They were able to build those apartments because of a tax credit program that the state provides, but once that tax credit program expired, they then sold to the highest bidder for close to $1 billion and put close to 70 tenants out because they could not afford it.
Okay.
So as a direct result, there are close to 12,000 units that are getting ready to go through this same experience. So that is something we have to figure out in the immediate near future. So it's not just about expanding the access to affordable renting opportunities, but also preserving those that we have.
That's great. Thank you.
All right, I got one last question. One last one. Last one, please. Touchy subject. I see the big platform the Democrats are running on is abortion. A lot of people actually, I'm surprised that I didn't know that people was going to have such mixed feelings about it. It's not just, well, of course you're going to have probably close to about 99-100% of women, because that's a, you know, it's, they're going to be like, well, okay, well, I think... Okay, well, at least African-American women, I would like...
relatively conservative, like you said.
Yeah, okay.
It's a mixed bag.
Okay, it's a mixed bag. Like I said, like I was surprised, too, to see just the, you know... So, in my mind, I would like to say, like, because African-Americans, we lead in abortion or whatever, the statistic that I've seen, and it was a stat that a lot of people did not like or whatever, that we, like, we actually lead in abortions or whatever. Now, in cases of, like... unless, you know, rape or incest, like, I can definitely understand, you know, but a lot of people, like you said, are more conservative, and it's like, well, maybe it's time to have a conversation about it. What do you think about, you know, let my people know how you feel about that topic, and then we'll get you out of here.
No worries, I'll stay as long as you need. Listen, I am adamantly about confirming, securing one's ability to make their own reproductive choices. I do not think that an individual that wants to have an abortion should have a conversation with their politician. I don't think they should have to be forced to have a conversation with the Supreme Court. The only person that they need to have that conversation is with their doctor and their God. And I think that decision should be absolutely left up to that person. And I think you're seeing that not just in Democratic spaces. You are seeing that in Republican spaces. You have seen that in Republican states that have tried to ban abortion access, completely go the different direction. And here's what their response is. And you've seen that in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, because that is one of the single issues as to why we were able to take the House, is because Republicans lost on limiting access to abortion. When these issues are on the ballot, they see it, not that they agree, right? And it's okay to agree, it's okay to agree, and it's okay to disagree, but it's not okay to make somebody's choice for them. And I think that was the focal point of the conversation. And I think that is why you've seen Democratic chambers take control of so many houses across the country, because, you know, once you start, you know, making decisions for the person as it relates to that issue, what's the next decision that you want to make for us? Where does it stop? So I do think the reproductive rights conversation isn't just about that individual's rights. It's about attacking your ability when it comes to your privacy rights. And, you know, I think that is just, you know, the tipping point. And I think what you've seen, and again, in those Republican states that have voted it down, is that they don't want you, whatever decision you decide to make, that is your decision. I don't necessarily agree with the, you know, policy issue. And that's what these, you know, Republicans are saying. But they also don't want to make that choice for you. They talk about limited government. You can't talk about limited government if you're going to be trying to dictate what happens and what I do with my body. Because not only are they talking about abortion access, they now talking about IVF. So they're considering IVF when, you know, a family has difficulty conceiving and them wanting to use IVF. They're trying to criminalize that. Right. They're trying to, you know, call that an abortion. And again, you've seen so many states that are, you know, going against that idea of you telling me what I need to do with my body. And again, it's not just a woman debate. It's a debate for, you know, our male population. Abortion is not just about your reproductive rights. It's about your ability to determine your economic pathway. You know, hypothetically, if you can't afford, you know, that option, it takes away, you know, that option for you if we, you know, continue to limit it. One of the other things this week is Black Maternal Health Week. And one of the issues that we focus on is the issue of Black maternal mortality and Black maternal morbidity. Not sure if you know this, but we are the number one nation as it relates to women dying during pregnancy. Yep. And Black women are 3 times more likely to die giving birth. So when you see states that limit abortion access, you see rates skyrocket as it relates to maternal mortality. Like in Texas, you see that. But here in Pennsylvania, we don't want to just stop the conversation as it relates to women's health at abortion. There are other things that we need to talk about. I mean, we need to talk about how we are protecting women, again, as they're giving birth, how we're protecting them during the postpartum period. You know, when people talk about abortions and they talk about fighting for life, I need you to fight for life after that conversation. I mean, that individual is more than likely going to live until about 80 years old. So let's, you know, fight for a minimum wage to ensure that they have economic opportunity. Let's make sure we fight to ensure that they have an adequate education system. I mean, there's a lot of things to fight for and to focus on. But you want to be in a doctor room with a young person, well, with a person as it relates to, you know, their reproductive health choices. So I think we got a lot to manage. I don't necessarily think that's one. The Republicans lost on that one. So let's protect families now.
Okay. Thank you so much. That was a great interview. Just to wrap it up real quick, I definitely heard that from a lot of African-American women when they go to these hospitals. They don't feel protected. They don't feel like the doctors care about them. I see, especially when they it can be abortion, it can be birth, it can be fibroid situations, any type of surgeries. So they don't. So it was important that you pointed that out. Right. A lot of stuff going on. A lot of stuff to talk about. So this was like a great, quick interview. I appreciate on a whim, unorthodox, What You Scared to Say podcast. Pennsylvania Representative Morgan Seifers.
I appreciate that.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. And I say, you know, just really keep up with your, really keep up with what you're doing. You have an audience that is very difficult for elected officials to reach, whether we're not present or, you know, they connect with you more than they connect with us. And, you know, the podcast world, I can barely still run TikTok and Twitter. If nothing else, I will. Yeah, like, you know, so we just sit here and talk. No, but I mean, it is an audience. There's, you know, the next generation, the younger millennials, the Gen Zs, they, you know, really tap in and tune into, you know, these avenues to get their news. So it's very important what you do. You know, I thank you for, you know, bringing politics to your platform. If nothing else, they about to ban TikTok. So needless to say, y'all need to get involved.
My generation, my group of people,
they have a discontent right now because they feel that automatically, right, because they're African-American, they feel that they automatically have to go in there and vote for a Democratic Party. Okay. They don't feel that their vote is being earned anymore. Okay. So I've seen a lot of this online, and I wanted to give a couple minutes why you think, you know, that their vote is still being earned. You're still putting in work for, you know, my generation of people, because they feel like, you know, automatically, I just got to, because they like some of the other things that, not everything, but the other side might, you know, be saying sometimes on particular subjects. Okay. So they just feel like automatically we just got to go into the booth and vote. Okay.
You understand? All right, I got you. Right. I got you. I don't know what your age is.
36.
Okay, right. So
30 years.
So about 30 years. So let me give you a little background on myself. Okay. I am the mother of two, and I have a bonus daughter, which gives me three. I am the grandmother of 10, that range from 9 to 31. Okay. And my daughters are 46, 37, and 41. Okay? So I get around a range of questions. And I think the nine-year-old is the most opinionated of all. Okay? And I don't know where she gets it from,
right.
But when I say that, everybody turn around and look at me, right. Because they say, you finally got one. Okay. And I said, got one what? And they said, one that act just like you. Point. Example. During the George Floyd incident, my nine-year-old looked at me and said, so white people kill us and black people kill us too? Because now she talked about what she saw on television and what she's experiencing in her life. Okay? So she talks to me about being afraid to go to school. She talks to me about walking home from school and will she get shot? Okay? So when we go to Harrisburg and we have to fight the other side, that we don't have an untraceable gun on the streets of Philadelphia killing our children, it's important to vote. Okay? It took us 5 hours. State Rep Morgan Cephas, who you just interviewed, introduced the bill, House Bill 777. It took us 5 hours to get that bill passed. 5 hours. Because they put up 9 amendments. Okay, I had a Playground Safety Act bill passed. Who in the world don't want their children to be safe in the playground? Right. But the other side put up amendments to stop us from getting these bills passed. I listen to my constituents. I listen to the young, the most vulnerable that I have to represent, right. To my most senior, right. Okay? And I try to introduce bills that are important to them. Right. Okay, but if you don't vote, right. If you don't send the leaders back to Harrisburg that's willing to fight to do this work, right. Then I can see why you don't think that your vote means anything. But we need you to tell us what your concerns are, right. So that we can sit down and draft a bill, introduce a bill, and get a bill passed. That's important. Right. That's important. So one of the things that I can say, if you walk in the booth and you don't know who you're voting for, right. That's the issue, right. Okay? So now you feel so you don't know. Right. But I can only teach you for so much. Right. You know, I can only educate my district for so much. Right. You have to get the information that you need. Right. But don't ever, ever think. Right. Because if we want change, right. And we have to have change, if we want change, then we're going to have to vote to get it. Right. So, that disheartens me that people think. Let me give you a little bit more history about myself. I come from the labor movement. I'm not a lifetime politician.
Okay?
I come from the labor movement where I fought for workers' rights, okay, wages, medical, affordable health care, and a pension that you can retire on with dignity. One of the things that would happen when we go into a new location, the boss would bring in union-busting attorneys. They promised you the world. They're going to give you more money. They're going to fix that sink over there that hasn't been working. They're going to take the asbestos out the building that's been there for years. They're going to do everything to keep you from getting a union. But after you walk away and say you don't want it, guess what happens? They go right back to where you was at before. They don't give you no money. They didn't fix that raggedy sink over there. And the asbestos is still in the building. So when you have to be careful, because everything that glitter isn't gold. okay? And that shiny new toy over there may tarnish a little quicker than you think. So because they over there promising you a whole lot of things.
And they are.
And they are. Because they want you to do exactly what they what they're hanging all this low-hanging fruit to you. They want you to say, hey, I'm not going to vote Democratic. I'm not going to vote for her or him. I'm going to vote over here for something new until you vote for it.
I got to follow up about that, what you just said.
Right? Okay.
Right.
So what you just said was important right there at the end, because in my mind and a lot of other people's minds that the city of Philadelphia, it's just a fact that it's just a blue city. And the state goes how the city goes or whatever. So we've had control for a long time. The Democrats have had control of Philadelphia for a long time. In my generation, they feel like it takes too long to get things done. So if we had the power for so long and the violence is still the same, the poverty has gotten worse. And, you know, we still got housing issues and the rents are going higher and people can't afford to. Day by day, if we've always had the power in a lot of people's minds, they feel, well, why not see what the other side got to say? We've had the power for so long. It's not like we'd be going back and forth. We've been had the power. So why are our streets still messed up? Where's the tax money going? Why is this? Why does it take so long for change? Why does it take? It feel like it takes a hundred. I'm 36. When I'm, you know, you get what I'm saying?
What you saying? So it's been. It's Philadelphia is a Democratic city. Right. It's a blue city.
Right.
But who were your leaders? But who were the leaders?
Who were the leaders?
Who were the leaders?
Right.
Okay, we have Sherelle Parker, the 100th mayor,
right.
The first black woman mayor, okay? In her first 100 days, we see a reduction in gun violence,
okay?
In her first 100 days, she's laid down a blueprint for us for affordable housing. You know, who were your leaders?
Okay.
Even though blue,
right.
But who were your leaders?
Okay?
Right. So what I'm saying is, you know what? I feel the same way you did. Why does it have to take so long?
Right.
Why do it have to take so long? Why are the streets still full of potholes and I got to take my car to the mechanic every other month?
Every other
why?
Month. Yeah.
You know,
where's
I get
right,
right. Right. I get it. So that's what we're saying now.
Yeah.
No more, no more.
Okay.
The state is not an ATM machine. We are going to hold you accountable for every dime that comes out of our budget.
Okay.
No more will you get money and you we can't see, we can't measure or the merit of what you're doing with
right.
the money. You know, because a lot of money come out, but we want to know where the money's going.
Where's
we want to know what you're going to do with it. We want to, you know, we need some reports.
Yeah, some
you understand?
Sheets.
Some spreadsheets, okay?
Right.
It's a new day.
Thanks.
It's a new day. And we want to know, and we want the accountability, you know, and we want to be able to see. Because if you're not doing the right thing,
right.
you're not going to get the money.
Right.
You're not going to get the money. And I love the class that we have, 30, you know, we have a new class of 31. They call me the senior freshman because I served in 2020,
okay.
you know, and the day I got sworn in, Pennsylvania was a state of emergency. It was the pandemic.
Okay.
Everything started to shut down. People were losing their jobs. The unemployment office, their computer system crashed. It was a hard time, and we hit the ground running, but not because I was a politician, but because I was trained in the labor movement.
Right.
Understand? And so we were able to go because we knew how to take care of people,
okay?
And we're still taking care of people, and I'm still taking care of people. I am the rep, the only rep in Harrisburg that introduced an $18 minimum wage.
Mm.
And it's my second one. In 2020, the first bill I ever introduced was a $15 minimum wage.
Okay.
I came back in 22. The first bill I introduced was an $18 minimum wage because 15 is no longer sufficient. That's right. We don't even want to say minimum wage.
Right.
We want to say living wage.
Living wage.
Because we need you to be able to pay your escalating rent, your escalating food prices, your escalating utilities.
Right.
We want you to be able to take care of your family.
Right.
You know? So I will say that it's blue.
Right.
We want to keep it blue,
okay.
But the leaders have changed.
Right. The leaders have changed.
The leaders have changed.
Okay.
You know? And that's what I want to give people hope about. The leaders have changed. We are holding people accountable. We are fighting for the things that we know will impact black and brown communities the most.
Okay?
Okay? So
that.
The leaders have changed. And all I'm asking for, give us a chance, and we'll show you what we can do.
I appreciate that. We're going to get you out of here on that note. I think that was a powerful message. I think my people definitely will like to hear that.
Okay.
Representative Ronnie Green.
Yes.
Listen, we're going to check you out. So you said this is your district?
This is my district right here.
Okay.
This is my district.
Okay.
And I'm in, you know, I don't, you know, I have a relationship with the police.
Right.
You know,
what
I
have. What can your district look forward to going forward? What do you have
so,
in mind?
You know what? So I just had a bill pass out, and it's called Safe Communities Grant Program, right? And so we know that criminals don't like to do their crime in the light.
Right.
They like to do it in the dark. Okay. Right? So what my bill says is that if it's an area that's dark, or that if it's an area that exists in crime, you're going to be able to get lights and cameras to light it up. And I wouldn't care if we look like Times Square in New York.
Right.
Let's light it up
light
to keep
up.
Our people safe.
Okay.
You know, so,
I like that.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that I'm doing. The other one is to get the lead out the drinking water for the children in our schools. And we want to put hydration stations and make sure that they're in every school across the Commonwealth, starting in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another bill.
I like
okay?
That.
The minimum wage bill. So, like I said, it's blue.
It's blue.
But the leadership have changed.
Okay,
that's
we're gonna
right.
get you out of there.
Okay.
Representative Ronnie Green, thank you very much.
All right, so we're here for another one, okay? We got State Committee Rep. Thomas Blackwell. All right, he here to talk to us about why we should vote. You know, first of all, I had a couple of state reps sit down already, and I asked similar questions or whatever. I got my peoples that watch the show, my generation. I'm 36 years old, all right? So they feel that that their vote is no longer being earned by the Democrats or whatever. Just because we're African-American, we should automatically just come out here and vote. And they like what some of the other certain subjects what the other side got to say. So in your opinion, you know, conversations you had, do y'all have these conversations? Are y'all aware that it's some apathy with, you know, my generation and feeling that, you know, there's no work being put in for real? Because the city of Philadelphia, to make it quick, has been run by Democrats for years. Ain't going back and forth. The Republicans don't got to, you know, so if the violence has gotten worse, if poverty has gotten worse, I know this year the numbers are down, but they be up and down. So if we've had control the whole time, a lot of them feel like, well, let's get the other side a shot.
I totally understand why they feel that way. And in some ways, I agree. We as Democrats need to do better. Somewhere along the line, we dropped the ball. The violence in the city of Philadelphia is out of control. The violence in the state of Pennsylvania is out of control. We are not meeting the needs of our families, friends, constituents. We are not meeting the needs of people who are in charge of not just voting, but hiring us to represent them the right way, be it in City Hall or at the state capitol. We need to start listening more to people. Having said that, I need constituents, registered voters. I need you to do me a favor. Do your due diligence. You have to research the Democratic candidates. Any candidate running for office, research those candidates. You have to look at the history. You know, we have to make conscious decisions, but we have to be smart about who it is we elect to speak for us. You know, a lot of funding is coming into the city for anti-gun violence, you know, this education, you know, but we don't want to just hear these things as constituents. We want to see tangible evidence. We want to see things that we can, as our mayor says, see, touch, and feel. We want that kind of change. And I believe Democrats in the city of Philadelphia are engaging enough that we are ready to turn it around. You know, there are a lot of great things happening in Philadelphia. It's a shame that, you know, we see so much of the violence and we see so much of the wrong things that are going on in Philadelphia. But there is a collective effort here, not just by city council members, but our state officials, to get our education system right, to get the guns out of the hands of our young people, to educate, you know, our young adults and help, you know, forge a path towards a brighter future in Philadelphia. So, you know, I agree with young people. However, you guys are going to be taking care of people like me. You're going to make sure that my Social Security doesn't get cut. You guys are going to make sure that there's a place for me, you know, when I become a senior. So, you know, it is up to us to be active listeners and really, really, you know, do the job that we were hired to do, and that's represent the people.
That's a great response. Real quick, you spoke about funding coming in, a lot of funding coming in for, you know, a gun control or just what, you know, this, that, and the fourth. So I don't know. I don't pretend to be the smartest person in the room. I'm trying to educate myself. I'm learning. That's why I'm sitting down having conversations. I want my followers to learn. Like, I don't know it all. So maybe it is out there. Maybe it's not out there. But a lot of people feel that their tax dollars, they don't know where it's going. So I don't know if you know, we can make it easier to where we can show the constituents, we can show the people this is exactly where you're, because people feel that they're getting taxed and their streets aren't getting fixed. There's always, like, when going West Philly, North Philly, South Philly, the streets, the way they look, if you go into Jenkintown, if you go into, you know, Chestnut Hill, you go into these other areas, they don't look like that. But it takes forever to get the streets fixed. It takes forever for construction to get done. So where's the tax money? They don't feel like, well, I'm getting taxed and I don't see where the money's going. Like, you get what I'm saying?
Right. So, you know, again, it's about, you know, doing your due diligence. And, you know, you got to research. And, you know, when you elect someone, you know, you don't elect someone just to, you know, fall in line with what your party, let's say, you know, what it is you feel should happen, whoever it is you think should control politics in the city, be it Republican or Democrat. What has to happen is you got to go to your state reps, you got to go to your council people, and you have to ask these questions. You know, if they're not being asked, you know, about where our tax dollars are going, then guess what? There's no reason for transparency. There's no reason to, you know, just spit out, you know, what the city budget is and what we're spending money on. You know, why we're able to do things like this. You know, people want to see their tax dollars being put to use. Again, that word tangible. They want to see things, you know, that benefit them. You spoke of the potholes. The potholes in the city of Philadelphia have been ridiculous for a very, very long time. I agree with that. However, you know, write letters to your state reps. Write letters to your council people. Make phone calls. You know, this is, you have to be a supervisor. You have to be a coordinator. You have to be the boss. You hired us to do a job, and it's up to us to get it done. And, you know, we cannot treat these positions, we cannot treat title, you know, as if we live above everyone. You know, when you come into a career of service, you are a servant. So you have an obligation to be an active listener. You have an obligation to take on those issues that the constituents who hired you, elected you, you have a responsibility to do what you can, all that you can, to take care of those issues. So again, you know, I would just tell constituents, you know, you have to stay on the backs of your elected officials. You want tangible explanations? Closed mouths don't get fed, you know. And guess what? It's up to constituents to develop relationships with your elected officials. You know, when I hear a lot of people, you know, they say, you know, well, we don't know the third district councilwoman. Guess what? Call her office. Go see who she is. You know, we don't know who our state rep. Call his office. Go see who he is. You know, we don't know who the candidates are, you know, running in this election. Guess what? Google them. You know, we all have a responsibility to each other. You know, we cannot be elected officials without, you know, our constituents, without people who believe in us and trust in us to get the work done. So stay on us. You know, we are more than happy to hear your concerns. And, you know, elected officials like myself, I'm going to war for my family and friends. I don't even like to use the word constituents. You know, I'm going to war for my family and friends. So, you know, if there's anything that I can do, you know, this is where I plug myself. Follow me at Tommy Blackwell, _. You know, check out some of the work that we do on there. My wife, Saja Blackwell, and I, Blackwell Culture Alliance, you know, feeding the community, fighting food disparities, you know, fighting homelessness. Right now we're in the process of talking to Holy Apostle about opening up a transitional home for men with children who are victims of domestic violence. You know, so we got to start thinking outside the box. You know, however, we need the permission of the constituents to move forward. You know, and some of us forget that. You know, so it's, you know, it's a relationship, hand in hand, hand in hand, give and take, you know, so stay on your elected officials, call, develop relationships with them. And if you want to see where your tax dollars are going, guess what? You got to ask. You got to ask. You got to stay in this fight. That's why it's so important. It's so important to go to those polls, but not just to push a button of somebody that you love or, you know, that did something for you. You got to, you know, look toward the future, you know, when you're pushing that button. So, you know, I encourage everyone, man, educate yourselves on who the candidates are. You know, look into their histories, you know, look into what they've done, you know, while in office, while not in office. And then, you know, also pay attention to the grassroots candidates as well. You know, people who are out here every single day on the ground fighting for their neighborhoods, you know, and we can get some work done. I believe the future is going to change, especially under our new mayor, Sherelle Parker, our new council president, Kenyatta Johnson. The energy is changing in this city, man. And, you know, it's going to take all of us, all hands on deck to get it done.
I think that's great. I think what you said was very important because a lot of people complain and, like, they think it's a magical fix that, you know, that you're elected to fix, they can just fix it. You have to do your work, too, if you live in a city. Like, you got to, you know, if you live in here, you got to do your part, too. You got to do your research. So we're going to get you out of here on that note. I appreciate you stopping with us. So thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you again. All right, we are back here once again with Chairman Commissioner Omar Sabir. We just want to ask a couple questions. We want to talk to my peoples. We want to figure out some things. My people, my generation, I'm 36 years old. They have a little apathy of why they should be coming out and voting. They feel like the energy is like a little bit down. They feel that automatically it's like being pushed up on them because they're African-American. They should have to come out and vote Democrat. And they kind of like some of the other side subjects here and there. So if you want to just talk real quick about why they should still come out and vote, why they should still support the Democratic Party, and things of that nature, take, you know, a minute or two. Just explain.
Sure. Well, thank you. Again, which you mentioned earlier, I'm Chairman Commissioner Omar Sabir. The city commissioners are a three-member bipartisan board of elected officials, and we oversee the election functions in Philadelphia County. So that basically means that the buck stops with us when it comes to voting. So we maintain the voter registration lists. We make sure that we count the results fairly and accurately. And, you know, I'm born and raised in West Philadelphia.
Okay.
And I'm here. And, you know, voting is larger than the Democrat Republican Party, right? Every time when you vote, you're going to vote for your community. Right. So if you vote, a policymaker is going to see that this community votes. And then what happens is, okay, we got to give resources to this community. Because in my mind, I want to be governor. I want to be president. The numbers are high. I'm going to give them resources. So we keep it simple. The more you vote, the more you get. Right? And even if you're fed up with any of the candidates, there's always a ballot question on the ballot that's asked you a basic referendum about your communities, yes or is no. And when you answer that question, yes or no, it goes into this data system, right? And everybody can see it. They don't know who you voted for, but they can say, okay, this community votes. So 19151 wants something, wants a request.
Right.
Oh, where do they come from? 19151? Oh, they vote over there. Oh, I got it.
Right.
It makes people move faster.
Right.
And there's also consequences when you don't vote. Oh, 19151? Oh, they don't vote. Oh, okay, well. Oh, I'll take my time.
Okay.
I'll do it, but no. Somebody from 19151 calling. Whoa, wait a minute. They vote.
Right.
Got to give it to them. So that's what we tell people, right? Okay. And that's why so many people sacrifice for our right to vote. Right? It's proving the quality of life for their family, friends. That's why 59 years ago, we saw foot soldiers, you know, cross at Emmett Pettus Bridge, got murdered, maimed, suffered traumatic things that happened to them.
Right.
And the reason why they vote is that the way they can just make things better for the next generation. That's what they said. Because a lot of those foot soldiers, they're still around. They call themselves foot soldiers. They're still around. So you come down Selma every year, they sort of like go over these things. It's Jubilee. It's a big deal.
Okay.
And not just there, man. Selma, Jackson, Mississippi,
right.
Atlanta, you know, all these different places where they went through so much for us to vote.
Right.
And when we look at sometimes, why would you do it? Why, you know, why? What's going on?
Right.
Like take Selma, for example. It's an 88% black town, but they didn't have any voice.
Right.
And the reason why they didn't have no voice is because people were intimidating them, saying, hey, you can't do this. Hey, we're going to charge you poll taxes. Hey, we're going to murder somebody in your family and leave that body up for a year. And don't, you don't touch that corpse. So these are things that's been happening, not just in the South, but all over. And, you know, we do it even now when we see the conditions of our schools. And then you look at the conditions of schools inside of the counties. You know, why do they do that? Why do they get more resources? And you look at different counties, they vote at a higher level. Yeah. And they get sort of get resources for their community. Okay. And so it's larger than just, again, that Democrat, Republican. When you stay at that level, yeah, that's going to, yeah, sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. Oh, well, sometimes, then sometimes we take a victim sort of mentality. Sometimes, oh, somebody just, we got to wait for them to know. You're either going to do what we want you to do, right, or we're going to elect somebody, right, who's going to do what we want them to do. Right. You have a choice. Right. But us not voting is never on the table.
Okay, I got one more question for you. That was great. That was a great response. But I feel like, well, not even feel, this is true. The Philadelphia city, this is a blue city. Where the state goes, where the city goes, where the state goes, or whatever. So the city of Philadelphia has had the Democrats Party. I know you want to get above that, but it's had a stronghold on, you know, the city forever, for years, for a long time. And when, especially my generation looks around, we look around at the poverty level, we look around at the housing crisis that we got, we look around at the violence, we look around, the streets, the way they're tore up. If they've come out and voted in record numbers for this party, and a lot of people feel my age that if we've been voting this way, been coming out in record numbers, it's not like, you know, we've never come out. Nothing's, why does it take 50 years for change? Why does it take 100 years for change? It feels like it's taking too long. They don't see a dramatic change, you know, far as, and you talked about quality of life, you know, because, you know, you had to do the individual job yourself as a person that, you know, make your life better. But it's kind of hard when, you know, you got landlords increasing the rent the way they is, and you got to take your car every other, you know, month to go get a tire change because the street, it takes so long for construction to get done. So what do you have to say that, you know, towards that, that if we had control for so long, it's not the other side doing these things. So, you know, where's the resources going, or the tax dollars going? That, you know, you understand the question?
I understand the question, but first and foremost, you got to understand that Philadelphia is one county of 67 counties. So, and we don't make up the majority of the state. So there are a lot of state regulations that regulate our state. And so our state, we have a Republican-controlled state legislator. Now, we just took control over the House, and that was a lot of work. When we think about those 50 years and all that kind of stuff, for a very long time, we had state representatives, and we had a state senate that was Republican controlled. And then every 8 years, we would switch from a Democrat to a Republican governor. So every 8 years, you had a Republican controlled state house, and a Republican controlled state senate, and a Republican governor. So they could come in and arbitrarily do a lot of things from a state level that can affect our quality of life. So what we saw was a lot of people are migrating from New York up into the Poconos area in the middle of the state. So a lot of places that were traditionally Republican are turning Democrat now. And so what you're starting to see is that spread out. You're starting to see districts being maneuvered. And then also what we're also seeing is that we're seeing some state judges from Philadelphia, Democrats, who were winning. And so when they do the redistricting, they do it every 10 years where they change the districts, the legislative districts, and then you're going to start seeing those sort of change. So again, nothing happens overnight. Okay, I'm 300 pounds, right? If I stop eating, if I eat healthy for 1 or 2 weeks, I'm not going to lose weight. It's a process, it's a mindset. And when we say record numbers, okay, that age 36, they don't vote. Talk a good game. We regular record numbers. No, you didn't vote. Yeah. Grandparents. Your grandparents, right? And so, and what we can say, and what we do know, is that we had programs like the dollar program. We had programs like with the gift programs, where our parents and grandparents owned multiple properties. They have given multiple properties to our families. And let's keep it real. A lot of that, they lost a lot of those properties from being weird and losing them, Jones.
Right. A lot of people messed up the bag.
Now, we're not going to say that you never have opportunity
right.
now.
That's true.
You know, and so, and now, so we got 10,000 properties that's tied up in the single titles. Whereas those, someone passed away, you don't have, never had a will. And you got these siblings sort of having these properties. A lot of people are fighting over these properties.
Yeah, that's true.
Where, and it's like, yo, we have an opportunity. It's like billions of dollars that we can access. It's like $10,000.
Like
yeah, I mean, and major shout out to former former registered wills Tracy Gordon, because she sort of raised this issue. She looked at these issues. That's almost $1 billion inside of our possession in equity. All you got to do is just figure it out, work together as a family, see who get the property, fix the property up, and you got a place to live
can I
at.
Say something about that real quick?
Sure.
That's important what you're talking about, you know, passing down and learning how to do that, learning about wills and getting the stuff done before you pass away and, and getting things in order. Is it, do y'all have meetings or conversations about how can we get this type of education into schools? Because that was another complaint, you know, that a lot of, you know, we don't learn about what we really need to learn about, like stuff like that. And I think that's important. Do we have, because I don't, it'd be cool if we had classes or some type of programs, and maybe there are, and we just don't know, or you know, people haven't done their due diligence. So, just for my people, if you can explain that, if there are already programs for that, are we going to get this in the school system? Because I think that's super important, so our community can be better when we get passed down houses and things and money and stuff like that.
Sure, I mean, the city has a wealth of like information. Just go to the regular city website. That'll be fuller.gov.
Right.
You know, that's our website.
Okay.
And, you know, you have council members, right? You have commissioners. You have registered wills. You have row offices.
Yeah.
The city has tons of resources.
Right.
The state has tons of resources.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody just click on an unclaimed property, put your name in it, it's unclaimed property, you'll be amazed. You might find $300 just sitting there. Like, seriously.
Right.
And then the federal government has tons of resources.
Right.
So let's just, again, y'all taxpaying citizens. Right, we pay taxes, so again, let's make our elected officials work for them.
Yeah.
Right, most city councils, most of the city council members are designed to a geographical setting. There's 10 of them. They represent a certain area. It's about maybe I believe it's about 250,000 people for each councilmatic district. Right. Talk to our family and talk to them.
All right.
You work for them, right? Come talk to them, call them up, say I got this issue,
right.
I had this problem, I'm trying to do something,
right.
And I can say, man, most elected officials, it's fine. Come on down to our office, talk to us. What you need help with? Come on down, whatever it is.
Right.
And then they're going to definitely if they can't help you, they're going to navigate you to the appropriate person. Send them emails, send them a phone call. That's what they're here for.
Right.
Taxpayers, y'all pay our salaries,
right.
So make us work.
Right.
And then if you can't get nothing done. Then at least say, oh, man, politics don't work.
Right.
You know, when you're trying to open up a business, something like that, you say, okay, I need support, I need this, or I got a nonprofit, I need some grant, I need some funding.
Right.
I need some certain steps that you have to take now.
Right.
You got to go through the regulatory process now.
Right.
And we have to accept the fact that, you know, someone isn't ready.
Right.
And then also don't always accept the story of what someone else is saying.
Right.
At least do your research.
Right.
Say, oh, man, I went to such and such office, they ain't nothing for me. What did you go down to such office and ask for?
Right.
And were you ready? Did you say, okay, I need some funding for my block party? Okay, do you got a nonprofit set up? Do you got a bank account? Who do you write the check out to?
Right.
You can't answer those questions. You got to have your ducks in a row, man.
Because
certain things, because it's the taxpayers' money, and, you know, it's a $6 million budget just for the city.
Right.
The state, I believe, is close to about $50 billion, and the United States government is just... It's gazillions,
right.
You know, so it's resources there for us. And then we'll see exactly how we can work from nonprofit world, elected official world, to the private business world, see how we can work together. A lot of the universities are also resources that we have in our community as well. They're nonprofit organizations. So if you may have a program or you might want something to get started, you can partner up with a university and the university will let you allow you to use their facilities. You know, they might even give you technical support. They might even give you resources. So all these different nonprofit organizations also service our community. Nonprofits don't pay that real estate tax. So it's the reason, you know, why they don't do it, because they offer a service. But as well, use them too.
Okay.
So there's tons of resources. And again, we have to work together. right? But it all, but the voting, that's the whole bottom piece. Right. Because when you do it, it's going to be for your neighborhood. And there's consequences if you don't do it. Gotcha. When you don't do it, it's okay, they don't care about the community. Yeah, I'm going to do whatever I want. Right. I'm going to put a liquor store there. I'm going to put a gambling, I'm going to put whatever I want to put in there because you don't care about your community.
Right.
And so it's a sort of mindset, it's a mentality, right? And that's, it's about citizenship. So we want to encourage our family and friends to do it, right? And the question that we got to ask ourselves, really, is what, so Election Day is April 23rd, what else can you do collectively for our community that's better than voting? And the thing is, look, we can do both. It's not one or the other.
Right.
We can vote and we can open up our businesses. We can vote and do whatever it is we want to do, but we want to vote. That's the basic minimum. You got to do that
right.
For citizenship, for your community. And then we'll do all the other things we want to do. But some people take this approach, oh, I don't want to vote, or we're going to hold back our vote, or we're going to, when you sit back and you do that,
right.
Oh, they even happy that you're doing it. Oh, I don't, that's good. I don't have to do nothing for them anyway. Oh, they don't
right.
want to vote? Oh, okay, cool, fine.
Right.
You know, so we have to understand, and we want to encourage younger people to be a part of the process.
Right.
The average age for the state rep, for state reps across our country is about 60 years old, 65 years old.
Yeah.
Right? We have, we're going to basically elect a president that's in their 80s.
Right.
And why is that? Because baby boomers, they vote more than anybody else.
Right.
And the largest voting block is ages 18 and 35, but they just don't vote like the way how those super vote, them baby boomers vote.
And this is the point of right. This is just the point of the podcast, so you know we can reach you know my generation and get the education because we don't you know a lot of people we don't know. That's why I'm asking these questions now. So
right,
I'm glad that you're asking these questions, right? And I want people to feel empowered. Right. If you want to run a candidate, run your own candidate.
Right.
Get everybody out. If they're not doing what you think they want to do, cool, fine. Run against them.
Right.
Right? Now, another flip side to that, man, right?
Okay.
You run against them. Let's just say you lose.
Yeah.
Are we still going to hear from you? Or are you going to hide in the shadows and say, oh, man, it's just bad? No.
Right.
We all spoke. Everyone here in this community said that this is the person that they wanted to be in leadership. Now let's support that person so we can have better results and better outcomes for our community.
Right.
I appreciate you. We're going to get you out of here on that note. Thank you so much for sitting down with us, man. Thank you.
Show my contact information.
Please.
Sure. So our website is vote.phila.gov, vote.phila.gov. Our phone number is 215-686-VOTE, 215-686-VOTE. And you always can send me an email at Omar, O-M-A-R, dot Sabir at phila.gov. Omar, O-M-A-R, dot Sabir at phila.gov.
Thank you so much.
From this track.
Turn me up a little bit. Turn me up a little bit.
You just watched What You Scared to Say podcast. Make sure you like, share, and subscribe now.